5 o'clock hour on this Football Friday here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Divisional playoff weekend. Two NFC games, two AFC games. The Rams and the Packers, the Ravens and the Bills, then the Browns and the Chiefs, and of course the Bucks and the Saints. In this part of the show, we're looking at the NFC. And Gambo, I'm going to kickstart this conversation with a general question. Of the two games that most people think are the surest things on the board this weekend, and I know one of them is in the AFC with the Browns and the Chiefs, but if I were to say to you, Rams, Packers, Browns, Chiefs, and there's an upset when we're in here on Monday, which one of those teams won when they shouldn't have?
Browns.
You think the Browns?
I mean, yeah, I think if there's going to be an upset out of those two, I'll take the Browns, right? You know, Kansas City is – I mean, I like Kansas City and Green Bay. I like the byes. I like Andy Reid's record off the bye.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I know. You're picking both of the favorites, because, and so am I. I'm just saying, you know, put your mind in that kind of that upset mode. And if you're going to make the case for one of those teams to upset
Browns,
the favorite that they're playing, you got the Browns?
Yeah, I just think because Kansas City's not – you know, Kansas City wins, but they don't dominate teams. Like, Kansas City's not a juggernaut that's beating everybody by, you know, by 30 points. They're winning games by a touchdown or less.
That's why I would pick the Browns, too. I'm not going to be blown away if we're in here on Monday and we're talking about the Browns beating the Chiefs. The Rams beating the Packers, as we turn our attention to the NFC, that might blow me away a little bit. And I get it. The Rams have the number one defense. They have Aaron Donald. They have the player that Troy Aikman himself last week during the broadcast called the best defensive player he's ever seen in the league, better than Lawrence Taylor, better than Reggie White. That's Aaron Donald in Troy Aikman's mind, and that's some high praise right there. This is, talking about the Rams and the Packers now, the ultimate matchup of strength versus strength, offense versus defense, offensive line versus Donald and Leonard Floyd of the Rams, Davante Adams at wide receiver against Jalen Ramsey, strength versus strength.
Everybody's picking the Green Bay Packers. USA Today, 7 out of 7 took the Packers. ESPN, all 9 of their talking heads picked the Packers. Both football writers at Pro Football Talk picked the Packers. NFL.com picked the Packers. New York Times picked the Packers. Pete Prisco picked the Packers. Sporting News picked the Packers. 538 says they have a 78% chance to win. Everybody's picking the Packers.
So Pete Prisco picked the Packers 5 times
Pete
fast.
Prisco picked the Packers.
You.
Pete Prisco, that's a funny one. Pete Prisco picked the Packers. Yeah, I can't look. Pete Prisco picked the Packers.
You can't even do it once, for the love of
Pete
God.
Pete Prisco picked the Packers. Packers. Pete Prisco picked the
Prisco
Packers.
Picked
see,
the
even
Packers.
That, I can't do it. I swear to God, I'm trying. Pete Prisco picked the Packers. There you go. Got it.
No. You called him Pete Prisco, which is
Pete Prisco.
Which is not going to endear him to come on our show.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
nope,
I can't
do
it.
There
can't
either.
Do it.
Yeah.
No. Everybody's picking the Packers. Yeah, the Pete Prisco thing really threw me for a loop right there.
Sorry, I didn't mean to, but it's hard to say that 5 times fast.
That would be a major
upset. You can't
say it
1 time fast.
I mean, Rams, I mean, listen, the Rams needed, they needed help to get in on the last day of the season. The Packers have been, you know, I think the best team for a while here in the NFC. I think it went back and forth, but I think the Packers settled in, you know, as the best team. They're favored by like a touchdown. I don't really care what that means, but I just, you know, I think the Packers have all the weapons offensively to win this game at home, bye week. You know, the Rams way to win it is just disrupt Aaron Rodgers and Aaron Donald and Ramsey, and that team just plays a great defensive game. They're very capable of it, but I don't think people are expecting it.
No, I don't think people are expecting it either. Matt LaFleur is certainly expecting Aaron Donald to impact this game.
He's a once-in-a-lifetime type player, and, you know, being there with him, I don't think you truly appreciate him until you start game planning against him. I mean, this guy is dynamic. I think Brandon Staley and his staff do a phenomenal job of just moving him all over the place. So it's hard to get a beat on exactly where he's going to be. But he's somebody that, you know, we're well aware of where he's going to be. Or we have to be well aware of where he ends up and make sure we communicate well. And account for him at all times, because he's a guy that can totally disrupt and impact, have a major impact on a game.
Of course, remember, Matt LaFleur is a former Rams assistant under Sean McVay.
Yes.
And if we're talking about defensive coordinators who have done a bang-up job this year, we're talking about Robert Saleh about a half hour ago. Brandon Staley for the Rams has been one of the most important acquisitions any team has made anywhere in all the NFL this season. He has had a huge impact on that defense.
Yeah, and listen, they had a really good win against Seattle. I mean, a very, very good win. But that Seattle team, as we talked about after the game, you know, that Seattle team is not that good. I mean, it's Russell Wilson and a bunch of, you know, question marks. I mean, they don't have the skill position players that Green Bay has. They just don't. So I don't know if you could have that say. Now you're on, you know, you're on the road in Green Bay. The weather, I have to look up the weather, right? But the weather's usually cold this time of year. So I think it's just going to be a lot more difficult for them. But defenses, you know, and I always used to pick defenses over offense. You know, when you had a good defense, a great defense against a great offense, I always believed that the defense would get the better of it and make a difference in the game. And a lot of times that does still hold true. But we're talking about a lot of advantages going Green Bay's way, including, you know, the extra week to prepare. And then you still have to score points. No matter how good the Rams' defense is, you still have to score points. Can the Rams score enough points with Jared Goff? I like Cooper Kupp. I like Woods. I think Akers has done a good job. So, I mean, it's possible. I mean, like, if you was – like, I wouldn't make a big bet on this. If I was a gambler, I don't know that I would – you know, I don't know that I would bet this 6.5 points or whatever it is going to the Rams on this one. It's probably going to be a close game.
It very well could be. Meanwhile, the other NFC game is the finale of the weekend, Sunday afternoon, between, of course, 43-year-old Tom Brady, 42-year-old Drew Brees. The combined age of 85 will be the oldest for two quarterbacks playing against each other in NFL history. It goes obviously well beyond that in the history of the league. Tom Brady is number one in passing yards, number one in touchdown passes. Drew Brees is number two in both of those categories. We already come to expect that this will be Drew Brees' last game. If they lose, that he'll retire one way or another after this postseason. And it's a matchup that was dominated by the Saints, and not just this year. Sean Payton is 4-0 against Bruce Arians since BA took the Bucs' jobs. There's been a lot of dominance by the Saints over Tampa Bay since Bruce has been there.
But this isn't as much about Drew Brees as it is the defense. When they beat him both times soundly, and they sacked Brady, and they harassed him, and they pressured him. You look at that second game. New Orleans had 15 pressures against Brady. That's the most he was pressured in a single game this season. So they find a way to get to him. You know, when they met in week one, they pressured him 9 times. And so they only blitzed him about 23% of the times on the 80 dropback. So it's not like they're bringing the house every time. They're able to get pressure on Tom Brady. And as we've seen in the past, I mean, go look at the Giants Super Bowls. When you get a lot of pressure on Brady, he seems that's when he struggles. So they had the 6 sacks in the 2 games against them. And then they've got, you know, good coverage on Evans. Lattimore's really done a good job of shutting him down. So this isn't as much, and they've got their weapons now. If you're New Orleans, you've got Kamara, got Thomas, you got Brees, but it's their defense that makes me believe that New Orleans is going to win this game.
Yeah, their defense has been outstanding all year long. Their defense just flat out embarrassed the Chicago Bears. Offensively, the Saints have been working really, really hard for their points lately and their yards. It hasn't come super easy to them as of late. This is a tough one for me to pick, because I know everything kind of points to the Saints winning based off of the history and everything that you just mentioned. But boy, Tom Brady is playing at such a high level right now. He's been one of the best quarterbacks in the league over the last 2 months of the season or so with the numbers that he's putting up. Against my better judgment, I'm taking Tampa Bay in this game. And I think this would be the 14th conference championship game for Brady, which is just absolutely insane. But you've got the Saints in this one.
Yeah, I can understand why you could pick Tampa Bay. I mean, you could look at those two games and say it's hard to beat a team a third time. I understand that. Antonio Brown, you know, maybe he's a big factor in this game. You know, I mean, He's very capable of being a big-time player, and it seems to be working out okay so far with Antonio Brown. But they got Evans. They got Godwin. They got Gronkowski. You know, they may, you know, if Brady could beat that pressure, you know, then maybe Tampa Bay could score enough points to win a game.
Yeah. When we come back, the Arizona Cardinals not going to have very much cap space this offseason. If they want to create some, what are the venues to do it? What are the players to deal with to do it? Some names that you're going to like and some you're not. Next on the Burns and Gambo Show. So yesterday on the Burns and Gambo Show, if you missed it, shame on you. If you missed it, we talked about this thing called effective cap space for the Cardinals. And basically a fancy term of saying, okay, the Cardinals have $25 million in cap space, but they've only got 32 or 33 players actually under contract for next year. So by the time you take the money it's going to take to fill out a full roster next year and re-sign guys and things like that, effectively, the Arizona Cardinals have only about $13 million in cap space. That's kind of a problem for the Cards, given that they have questions at wide receiver and cornerback and running back and maybe tight end and always looking for depth on the offensive line and edge rusher and replacing Reddick if he leaves and on and on and on and on and on. Compounding all of that is the pressure on the Cardinals next year to get to the playoffs, because it's there. It's real. They went from 3 to 5 to 8 wins. They have to get in next year. Otherwise, that's going to be an issue over there for the Cards. It's a lot of pressure next season. So you brought up the idea, Gambo, of, okay, there's obviously ways to create cap space and come up with more, and they're going to have to do that. And our friends over at CardsWire.com came up with 6 contracts that would create cap space if you wanted to do away with these players. Some of them are very obvious. Some of them are guys you'd like to keep. And some of them are big ticket guys that you would love to keep but are certainly intriguing to mention. Let's start with the obvious ones. Robert Alford is the most obvious one on the list, given he hasn't played for you and you can save a lot of money by getting rid of him.
Yeah, there doesn't seem to be any scenario, I mean, in which the guy wasn't available for 2 years. I mean, so no, you he's going to be gone. I mean, there's no question about it. You can't rely on him. Even if you wanted to bring him back on a minimum type contract, I couldn't trust the fact, because I need guys that are available. He clearly wasn't available.
Yeah, he is due $7.5 million. He will count $9 million against the cap. If you cut him, you instantly save $7.5 million on the cap. No brainer, number one. No brainer, number two, is Devon Kennard. You will save yourself $4.5 million. There's going to be some dead money there, about $3.5-4 million in dead money, but you can get yourself another $4 million against the cap if you cut Devon Kennard. And I imagine, again, that one's a bit of a no-brainer for the Cards.
Yeah, listen, I'm getting the calculator now, and I'm starting to add up this money, and I get 13 here, and I get 4 there, and I get how much was offered. I mean, yeah, that's what you're looking for. I mean, this is the way to create some money. Outside of restructuring a contract or two, this is the easiest way to do it. It's just, you know, clear out the players who can save you some money on the cap that haven't been, you know, contributing the way you need them to.
Yeah, Alford was 7.5 if you're getting out the old calculating and add it up. Now, those two are the obvious ones. This is where things start to get complicated. Number 3 on Cards Wire list, Justin Pugh. Cutting him would save about $7-7.5 million. It would also create about $4 million in dead money. Trouble with Pugh is, A, he was pretty good last year outside of the penalties, and B, you don't have a real obvious replacement ready to go.
Yeah, that
in
makes
his
it
place.
Hard. Yeah, that makes it. He's only 30 years old. He's a good football player. So, like, if you let him go and you want to go sign a guard, how much is it going to cost you? I mean, you think you're going to go get great guards for $2 million, $3 million? I mean, probably not. I mean, you know, it's just hard. It becomes harder. I think you hang on to Justin Pugh for another season at least. I like him. I don't think he's had a slip in his game. I think he's been a good player since a good acquisition. I think he was a good free agent signing. He's played, you know, done a good role for them. You may look at the price and say, okay, I could save some money, but you need players. Like, you can't just cut everybody that's a high-salary player. It doesn't work that way.
Yeah, and without knowing all the details of his contract, you know, as you mentioned, and we'll bring this up again specifically for one player here in a moment, but restructuring, moving some things around, I mean, it exists for a lot of these guys that we're talking about. Not all of them have that many years left. There's not much you can do with their contracts, but certainly that's going to be something you would think the team would look at too. Number four on the list, linebacker Jordan Hicks, who I feel like has been a solid, not spectacular, but solid free agent get for the Cardinals from a couple years ago.
Yeah, I think so too. And that's, again, you get to the point with some of these guys is like, you know, if you have somebody waiting in the wings and you feel like, okay, I've got a guy, I got Isaiah Simmons, he's ready, he could take over, then it makes it a lot easier to make that cut. But when you don't, you're struggling. The thing about Hicks is that, you know, he's a leader of that defense. I mean, he calls the plays and he gets everybody lined up and he's a, you know, he can cover pass coverage. He can stuff the run. He's a good, solid player. And, you know, I understand the, oh, you got to free up all this money, but then, you know, you don't want to create more needs than you already have. That's the tricky part.
Yeah, that is the tricky part. And with Jordan Hicks, you know, Isaiah Simmons is there to take over for Devondre Campbell, not for Jordan Hicks. And again, there are not everything's perfect with Jordan Hicks. I think he mostly does a solid job. Cutting him would save about $3 million in cap space, but it would create about $6 million in dead money. Here's the whopper, and here's the most interesting name on the list, and that's Chandler Jones. He's due $15.5 million next year. He has the largest cap hit on the team. He comes in at more than $21 million. Cutting him or trading him would save the team about $15.5 million. So you would get nearly $16 million back against your cap. But again, at what cost when you're talking about this elite pass rusher who's going into the last year of his deal?
What's the savings?
$15.5 million
saved.
Wow. Yeah, cutting or trading him would save $15.5 million.
Damn. I mean,
it's a lot.
I mean, I got to. Yeah, I just. Wow. Is Reddick coming back? Can I save that money? Do you give that money to? I mean, Chandler Jones he's not Hassan Reddick. Okay, he's a premier pass rusher. You know what you're going to get from him almost every single year. I mean, Hassan Reddick may be a one-hit wonder. We just don't know. So that is, I mean, I like the savings. It's a lot of savings. But again, it's scary when you've got a premier pass rusher. He's been consistent for you. He's been a great Cardinal since he's got here. If you want to let that guy go, I mean, you know, good luck trying to find somebody else that could get you those amount of sacks.
I want to read you this from CardsWire, and this we didn't talk about this the last time. And this is what they wrote, quote, "What is more likely is an extension, which would also potentially create cap space without having to look bad by cutting their best pass rusher," close quote. Would you extend Chandler Jones to create cap space and not cut him, or would you worry about extending a guy who's going into his 30s and you start to wonder about productivity as he starts to get older in this league?
How close are they? I mean, you're looking for the playoffs next year, right? You're looking for the playoffs.
Yes.
I don't think I would. I don't think I would extend him. And then, again, everything we talked about this, kicking the can down the road and, you know, having, you know, potential dead money, you know, in the future. There's a danger to that. There's a big danger to that. Maybe you could do it with one guy, and maybe Chandler's that guy. And, you know, who's to say that he can't be productive for a few more years? Maybe he can be. It's probably worth a look, but I think I'd be hesitant to do it. But a lot of it will depend, too, on what can you create. You know, we talked about Alfred's gone and Kennard's gone. And where can you get to in freeing up this money to where you wouldn't have to do that with Chandler Jones?
Yeah, it's an interesting thought because are you talking about two more years at which point you're going to be able to get out of it? I mean, you are kicking the can. And as I mentioned yesterday when we talked about this, day before, I can't remember, I think there's going to have to be some can kicking by the Cardinals this offseason. I just think there's that. It's a fine balance. It's a real line they have to walk here. But I do think with the immense pressure they're going to put on themselves, and that's going to be put on them to make the playoffs, they're going to have to enter a little bit of go-for-it mode. I mean, as responsibly as you can, but you're going to have to enter go-for-it mode next year, knowing that you might pay for that 2 years down the road with some real bad cap decisions that you've got to make. I think the pressure on them is intense enough next year. They might have to make some decisions in the short term that sacrifices the long term a little bit. It's tough to do, but you might have to if you're the Cards this
year.
Yeah,
especially with all the pressure that's on to win now. I mean, there's no question that, you know, you want to do that. But, okay, so that's that way you don't cut a guy like that. You extend them, restructure, whatever you want to do, create some cap space, you bring them back. I mean, Chandler Jones has always given this organization 100%. I trust him. I would count on him. I would think he's going to come back and have a big year, you know, next year. Maybe he's not at the point where he's going to lead the league in sacks anymore, but I still think he's a premier pass rusher, and is he's somebody that offensive coordinators have to be aware of when you're setting your protections because of how good Chandler Jones is.
When we come back on the Burns and Gambo show, James Harden has spoken for the first time as a member of the Brooklyn Nets, and one of the best basketball players of all time had some real harsh but very true words about Harden in Houston that you'll hear next on the Burns and Gambo show. Boy, that is tough news about Carl Anthony Towns. You see that and your heart just drops a little bit. His mom, six family members have passed away, and now he has it. And you know, we sit here and we talk about postponements and you know, the disruption of the schedule and can they get the season in. And then, you know, you realize there's – and not that we need a Carl Anthony Towns to realize that, but we're just so wrapped up in the sports side of this. You realize there's a human element to this too. And the idea that Carl Anthony Towns would test positive for COVID is just some cruel, cruel irony when it's all said and done when we're talking about this, Gambo.
Yeah, I was reading a story just a short time ago. Yeah, last month he said, you know, seven family members, including his mom, had already died from the coronavirus. Wow, that's just, oh my God, that's just so terrible. So
it is,
brutal, and now he has it.
It's just brutal. Yeah, and so that has caused the Grizzlies-Timberwolves game to be postponed. That came down about 2 hours before tip-off. Of course, we still haven't heard anything new from the Suns. I assume you haven't heard anything new from the Suns about positive tests.
Last thing I checked just a short time ago on, you know, how does it look for Monday, and what I was told is that there is no word to believe that they aren't playing. So that would lead me to believe that we had another day of negative tests.
Okay.
So I was just told a short time ago that there is no word at all to believe that they aren't going to play that game. So, you never know. Maybe one guy, I mean, even if somebody tested positive, it could be one player and they're isolated so you feel okay about it. But the good news is that they feel like they are on track to play that game and haven't heard anything differently.
Yeah, it's against the Grizzlies, who had their game against Minnesota postponed tonight because of the positive tests on Minnesota. And, of course, that's a nationally televised game on Monday on MLK Day with the Suns and the Grizzlies. So that's the next time the Suns are scheduled to play, and it would have been a full week since their exposure to the Washington Wizards, who now have six players who have tested positive and who have seen games on Sunday and now Monday for the Wizards that were postponed because of those tests. Meanwhile, from the association, of course, the big trade still resonating throughout the league. James Harden to the Brooklyn Nets for all those draft picks. Victor Oladipo involved. Caris LeVert involved. Four different teams. And in the midst of it all, this idea that James Harden did everything he could to bring a championship to Houston, a notion that Shaquille O'Neal took a blowtorch to last night on Inside the NBA.
You know, when you say you gave the city your all, that ain't true. And I'm about to say some things, and keep in mind I have G14 classification to say these things. You asked for Dwight Howard, we gave him to you. Didn't work out. You asked for Chris Paul, we gave him to you. You asked for some shooters, we gave it to you. We asked for Westbrook, your homeboy from Little League, we gave him to you, it didn't work out. And when you say I gave you everything, I say no, you didn't. Because the last five games, when it comes to elimination, you're 1-4. You've been shooting 41%, 24% from three, 32 assists and 27 turnovers.
He ain't wrong.
He's not wrong.
He ain't wrong.
Yep. Not wrong at all. Nope. Yeah, I think you know, these guys can be critical of Harden because he had his opportunities to win there and he didn't do it, and they gave him everything that they want and they got close. And, you know, I think when you get close, you know, like like our son, the Suns team, like the Suns teams that got, there's always that complaint, oh, if Amari and Boris didn't come off the bench, they would have won it. But I don't think there was a player like that got, you know, Nash played it out as long as he could. Amari played it out as long as he could. So did Marion. And, you know, it was kind of different with, you know, with James. I think that they traded him at the right time where he had high value and a team was desperate for him and you got as much as you could. You have a run for five, you know, 4 or 5 years, and if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. And, you know, like with the Suns, you could say, did those guys do everything they could to win? And I could say, yeah, they did. That those teams did everything they could to win, and they just came up short. And I think that Harden, up until now, like, you know, he's miserable now, so he wanted out. But up until now, he struggled in those big games. What Shaq say? He was 1 for 4 in those elimination games?
Yeah, he was 1 and 4, you know, with the turnovers and the assists. They weren't very good. He didn't shoot very well. You know, a lot of those games are of, you know, everybody saw him struggle as badly as he did in those games. And no, he didn't perform well in those situations. And I guess, you know, kind of the disingenuous part, and this, again, is where Shaq is right on the money. Man, Houston gave you everything you ever asked for. I mean, how many more superstars do you need to be paired with before you start to realize what the actual problem here is, you know? And that's what will make this Brooklyn Nets experiment so fascinating. Did they finally pair him up with the right superstar? Did they finally get it right where they got it wrong with Westbrook and they got it wrong with Paul and they got it wrong with, he's not a superstar now, but at the time he was thought to be, in Dwight Howard. You know, all these superstars they've tried to pair Harden up with, did they get it wrong all those times, but they got it right with Kevin Durant? I don't know. We'll see, because at some point you just kind of throw your hands up and say, dude, these guys we're pairing you with, they're not the problem. You're the problem. You know, you're the one who plays a style of game that makes it very hard to win a championship with, because you're hogging the ball and you're keeping it all to yourself. And it's a very difficult system to play with. And I don't know. I can't wait to see if he has success in Brooklyn, if they have success in Brooklyn. It's almost going to make them must watch every single night just to see how those three guys gel together when they're on the floor.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But I think people are going to root against them too, right? Kyrie's not a likable guy. Durant, you know, I don't think he's that likable either, to be honest with you. And Harden's not likable. You got three guys that aren't really that likable. Who's going to want them to win? Like, who wants that team to win? Nobody wants to see that, put three superstars together all making a gazillion dollars and help. Nobody wants to see that team win unless you live
in Brooklyn.
It's not
the most likable bunch of guys. No, it's not the most bunch of likable guys at all. I mean, it's in some ways, I think the Miami Heat, you know, the Wade, Bosch, LeBron James, I think they were infinitely more likable than the Nets threesome that they have. But there were still people who rooted against those Heat teams back in the day because of what they had done, because of how they had formed that team and all these expectations that they had.
It's more accepted and more normal. It's still, you don't have to like it, but it's more accepted and more normal now that they put these teams together.
But it's easier to not like it when you don't like the players involved. And in this circumstance, to your point, Kyrie Irving, he's, you know, burning sage around courts. Kevin Durant is hopping from team to team to team, trying to get as many rings as he possibly can, which, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, I guess. It's just the way he goes about it. Harden, you know, basically forced his way out of Houston. He's been paired up with half the superstars in the league with no championships to show for it. It's not a super likable team, but I tell you what, it is, you look at that roster, it is the most talented team in the Eastern Conference. I mean, they're a dynamo, man. They're a powerhouse, and they're, you know, suddenly I think the game they're playing on Monday is against the Milwaukee Bucks. Okay, that game just became enormous, right? That game just became, I mean, it was pretty big to begin with, but now it's like, oh my God, it's the Bucks and the Nets in the Eastern Conference. That's almost become must-watch TV at this point.
Yeah, if they play each other in the playoffs, sure. I mean, see, Milwaukee did everything they needed to do, right? But getting Drew Holiday and to make sure that Giannis stayed and signed the extension. And I still feel good if I'm Giannis. I mean, look, Harden is old. Durant is getting old. Like, these guys don't have, like, no, not everybody's LeBron, that they're going to play at a super high level until they're 37, 38. These injuries become a factor. They do. And Kyrie's had injuries, and Durant's had injuries, and you know, and you got egos to manage. And it's not like you have this experienced coach that knows how to manage egos. You got a guy who was a former player just a few years ago. So it is going to be interesting to see if they're able to have success with it. Now, maybe it happens next year, right? Because that's what happened to the Heat. The Heat put that team together, and they did not win that first year. It was the second year that they won, not the first year.
Text the word WIN to 620-620. Your chance to win two Ultra Package wristbands at Harrah's Auction Casino, which include unlimited bowling, laser tag, movie passes, and all of that. Text WIN to 620-620. We all win with Auction. Our final look at the second round of the NFL playoffs. The divisional games this weekend. Who comes out on top? Will there be an upset that we'll be talking about on Monday? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Quick baseball notes. And I only bring this up because I know Gambo will if I don't. Corey Kluber, 1 year, $11 million contract with the New York Yankees.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, everybody's looking for starting pitching, right? If he could come in and be a decent number two and number three, maybe that works for them. I'm interested to see, and I don't know the numbers, I'm interested to see what he gets financially.
Well, I just said 1 year, $11
million. Is it, and no incentives or anything like that?
It just got reported.
Okay.
So those might be reported later. But so far, all I'm seeing is
1 year and $11 million. Yeah, think about that. Like, that's like the Diamondbacks went and they watched him. They watched the workout, but they can't afford to do that, $11 million. And, you know, obviously, the D-backs have more priorities than that, right? Relief pitching and a right-handed bat. But even for a guy like that that's been injured and his fastball's at 88 to 90, $11 million. Wow, crazy.
Yeah.
I thought he'd get an incentive-laden deal.
And you know what? It might be – maybe we'll find out there are more incentives attached to it when we get more details. But for now, all I'm reading is the two-time Cy Young Award winner gets a one-year $11 million deal. And something that you had pointed out, and I totally agree with this, expect a lot of one-year deals this season in Major League Baseball. That is going to be the deal that DJ LeMahieu got with the Yankees yesterday, 6 years, $90 million. That is going to be the exception. That will not be the rule this year. You're going to see a lot of one-year deals.
Yeah, because the players are going to want it too, not just the teams.
Oh, yeah.
The teams are going to want it.
Yeah.
The players are going to be like, yeah, I want that too. I don't want a long-term deal with the money the way the money is right now.
Yep, no one's going to spend it. It's going to be you and I both believe it. It's been a quiet winter in baseball, and what is today? January 15th. I suspect here in another couple of weeks or so, you're going to see a mad dash to the baseball player store, and you're going to see teams just trying to pick up as many bargains as they possibly can to fill out their rosters, because I think there's going to be a ton of guys available 2 weeks from now who will all be desperate for their own Corey Kluber kind of 1 year, got to get my contract this year, got to get a 1 year deal. I think you'll be able to find some pretty slick bargains 2 or 3 weeks from now at the baseball store if you want.
Agents are going to be panicking, right? Right about now, my guy doesn't have a deal. I got to find you a deal. And I'll have to sell him on, just take a 1 year deal, play well, and we'll come back next year and reevaluate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what's going on in Major League Baseball. And, of course, today was also, just real quick, it was the deadline basically to come to an agreement with an arbitration-eligible player before the two sides had to, you know, put in their two numbers for the arbitration hearing. The Diamondbacks had three arbitration-eligible players, and they reached one-year agreements with every single one of them. Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, Caleb Smith, the left-handed pitcher, they all avoided arbitration. They all signed one-year deals today. So the Diamondbacks will have no arbitration that they'll have to deal with. All right, NFL. Big playoff weekend this weekend. I can't speak for Gambo on this one. My favorite football weekend of the year, because you've kind of cleared out the riffraff from wild card weekend, but you still have four games, not just two like you do next weekend. So this is my favorite weekend of the year in the NFL because I think they're all really good matchups. And I really like this year's matchups. There's a couple that look like they should be no-brainers. But I think, Gambo, and I think you agree, even the no-brainers this year aren't exactly no-brainers. They are potential upsets looming in both of those games that I think you have to be cognizant of if you're a football fan.
Yeah, no, maybe we come to Monday and be like, God, how could we have thought that the Browns were going to beat Kansas City? That was so dumb. Or how did we think the Rams even had a snowball's chance against Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay? That could happen on Monday. But right now, that you can make arguments that the Rams defense with Donald and Jalen Ramsey is capable of slowing down Green Bay, and because Ramsey could shut down Adams and Donald could wreak havoc, and then, you know, Cooper Kupp and Woods and Akers, maybe they might have enough offensively. You can make that argument right now. Same thing with the Browns. They got a really good running game, right? I mean, they got Chubb, they got Hunt, they got two good running backs. Kansas City hasn't been beating anybody by more than 6 points in 2 months. All of their games are close games. So you could literally, you could look at it now and you could be like, okay, yeah, I like Kansas City and I like Green Bay, but can I find a reason to think that these other teams have a chance? Yeah, you're damn right we can.
Sure, I can find a reason. I can. The reason is the Rams defense. The reason is Aaron Donald. The reason is, you know, Jalen Ramsey. The reason is Leonard Floyd. Yeah, I can find a reason. The Browns, sure. Baker Mayfield, I can find a reason. Nick Chubb, I can find reasons. It's the Chiefs themselves. It's like you've pointed out all day today. It's not like the Chiefs have been, you know, killing teams over the last 2 months of the season. They've played a lot of close games. They've given up a lot of sacks. They haven't sacked the opposing quarterback a lot. The line looks a little suspect. Were they bored? Maybe. Were they just waiting for the playoffs to start, knowing that's really all that mattered for this team? It's
you
possible.
Think so, right?
Yeah, I think that's natural. I think that's kind of human emotion setting in, especially when you're as talented as Kansas City is. You can probably beat a team on any given Sunday when you're playing at 85%, you know, given how much talent they have. But yeah, there's a vulnerability there. They're vulnerable. The Packers are vulnerable. I think if we're here talking about an upset, and I don't count Ravens, Bills, or frankly even Bucks, Saints, as I don't think either one of those would really be an upset like the other two would. I think if we're in here talking about an upset, we're talking about the Browns over the Chiefs. I just think that would be the more likely upset of the two, more than the Packers and the Rams. And honestly, that's probably a Jared Goff thing. Of all the teams rolling into this weekend, do we really believe in the Rams quarterback that much to get them past the Green Bay Packers? Doesn't feel like it.
I mean, look, you even think that they would have went with Johnny Wolford over him if they had a choice.
It's just a hunch.
I don't know. I mean, it's hard to think. I mean, Goff came in and did a good job last week, and they won the game, and Wolford doesn't have much experience. But, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think we'll ever find out. I don't think McVay's going to say, yeah, I would have went with Wolford. Even if Goff has a bad game, I don't think he would have came out and said that. I guess I don't know where they go with Goff going forward. You know, maybe these games are important to him and his future. We'll find out.
All right, so, again, recapping our picks in – order of the games that are going to be played. The first game that is going to happen is the Rams-Packers on Saturday. You and I both have the Packers in that game.
Yep.
Then on Saturday evening, the Ravens at the Bills. I have the Bills. You have Baltimore in that game.
Yeah, I'm taking the Ravens. I mean, it should be a really good close game, but if it comes down to a field goal, I like Justin Tucker more than I like that rookie.
Browns Chiefs, you and I both have the Chiefs, and that's Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock Arizona time, and then at 4:40 on Sunday, Bucks Saints, you have New Orleans, I have Tampa Bay.
Right,
that's that.
Right,
that's
so we're each kind of picking we each have a road team, right? I mean, I've got Baltimore on the road, and you've got Tampa.
On the road.
Okay.
We'll see. We'll see where we are on Monday. Time for the Coors Light. What's on tonight? Games we're going to watch this evening, and it's brought to you by Coors Light. Obviously, no Suns, Warriors. That game has been postponed. But there is a whole bunch of NBA action tonight, including the Mavs taking on the Bucks. You've got the Pelicans taking on the Lakers later tonight. Few NBA games, NHL obviously on the slate as well this evening, but a couple of nationally televised games in the association with Dallas and Milwaukee and New Orleans and the LA Lakers. So that is what is on tonight. And then we're going to be back on Monday at 2 o'clock, hopefully, We're talking about a Suns game later that afternoon against the Memphis Grizzlies. We'll see. And, of course, we'll be looking back on the NFL playoff action as well. So thanks for hanging out with us all week here on the Burns and Gambo Show. Have a great weekend, and we'll see you Monday at 2 o'clock.
Have a great night, everyone.